Blog Talk Radio. Hi, I'm Cindy Sansone Braff, author of Grant Me a Higher Love, How to Go from the Relationship from Hell to One That's Heaven Sent by Scaling the Ladder of Love. That's a big title. It's a big book. Love's a big topic. The music you heard at the beginning of the show was called Eagerly Pleased, composed with love by my nephew Miles DeBastian. Once again, thank you for joining us. I'm a woman on a mission, and that mission is to have you and everyone else have the best love life possible in this new millennium. But before this can happen, you're going to have to learn a few new tricks. Joining me tonight are my co-host, Kim and Nicole. Nicole's a beautiful young woman, a writer, an entrepreneur, and a lesbian, not necessarily in that order, and she's here to share her love stories and war stories with us. She's the voice that will make all of us women stop blaming everything on the opposite sex, since Nicole knows women are making some of the same kinds of mistakes in their relationships with each other. Kim is a beautiful woman as well. She's a divorced mother of two. She's recently made a wonderful career change, and everyone's quite excited to hear about her new life. This is a call-in show. We do depend on your questions and your responses. The call-in number is 646-929-0958. Now, tonight we're going to be talking about endings, not just endings of relationship, but pretty much endings in every way. But we will be concentrating on what happens at the end of a relationship and some lessons we could learn. I've been getting a lot of emails from a lot of brokenhearted people. I don't know if it's something in the air, but people keep saying, I'm not making any sense of why this relationship didn't work. I don't understand what I'm supposed to learn. So this is a topic that I think we can't discuss enough. Anyway, we have Nicole here. We have Kim. Do either of you have anything to say about this topic before we even approach it?
Nicole,
I actually have a lot to say about this topic, and I've been talking to a lot of people about, you know, they want to end their relationships, they don't know how, they don't, you know, and I just give them insight, and I'm always telling people to rekindle the relationship, and I really, really, truly believe that people should try to do that. And then they said, well, did you? And I kind of laughed, and I said, well, by the time I thought to rekindle the relationship, the relationship was basically dead. And, you know, so people know I did not divorce my husband overnight. It wasn't something that, you know, it was a long time coming, and my mind and my heart were fighting each other. My mind's telling me to stay for the kids, and, you know, because it's a marriage, and my heart's just not in it anymore. So eventually, you know, when my heart was somewhere else is when I could make the decision personally. But in the relationship ending, what I learned was a lot about myself and what I don't want in future relationships. So in my preceding relationship to that and the ending of that relationship, I think that I learned more about myself. And in learning about myself, I needed to be alone. Most people just jump into the next relationship without really knowing what they want. And although at times it can be frustrating because I do know exactly what I want, you know, it limits the time that I have to spend with somebody that doesn't fulfill those qualities. But the time alone, which was, you know, my choice, and I'm grateful for that relationship because I have spent time alone and I have gotten to know myself and know exactly what I want.
And I think ending relationships helped you?
Absolutely, because I think most people just are looking so fast to get into another relationship, which I've been guilty of myself in the past, that they really don't take time to get to know themselves outside of the relationship. So they just throw themselves in another relationship, and, you know, sometimes people tell me, oh, my God, it's the same relationship, but the person just has a different name.
Right, and that's because people haven't learned the lessons in the ending of the relationship or why it was brought to them, what didn't make it work, what patterns they keep duplicating. So if you just go kind of mindlessly from one relationship to the next without really stopping to figure out what happened, you're only going to make that same mistake.
And also, people, what did I learn from this? What if you just give yourself some time and you know, develop some patience, which I'm still learning on a daily basis. The answer will come to you eventually. You know, the answer will come. It's not going to come tomorrow. It might not come in 6 months. For me, it might even, you know, take a little longer than that. I don't know, but every day I wake up and I smile and I always say I made the right decisions in leaving my marriage. And, you know, we're both happier people now. And I have no regrets, but I didn't know, you know, from the last relationship, why did this happen? And I'm questioning it. And now I know. It took a little while, but I do know. It's because I really need to realize who I am.
And that's the most important thing, realizing who you are. Because I remember when Shauna was growing up, she had a friend, and I won't say her name, but she seemed to not have any distinct personality. And every boyfriend she had, she took on their personality. So if one was a greaser, then all of a sudden she was this greaser girl. If one was sort of a yuppie guy, then she was this yuppie girl. She seemed to, you know, sort of be this chameleon that every boyfriend she became a different person. And it showed that she really didn't have a clear sense of self and who she was. And so it's very important that in getting to know who you are will help make the next relationship better. And so we always talk about the step 19, and that's understanding the eighth golden rule of love, and that's practicing the art of blessing our relationships before letting them go. So how we all bless them or do we curse them on the way out is an important concept, because where you end a relationship, if you end a marriage on a very toxic note, your next relationship will begin on a toxic note. You sort of get what you go up the ladder of love depending upon where you ended. So it's always best to try to end our marriages as kind and correct, or any relationship as kind and correct as we can. And that does take a little bit of know-how and getting used to. Now, Nicole, when you ended your relationship with your ex, do you think you did it fairly and kindly? Are you proud of the way you ended it? Did you become friends afterwards? Is it possible to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, basically, when things were coming to a close with my ex, both of us knew that it was a long time coming, and we were both just hanging on to the threads that were left of whatever we used to have. And basically, you know, when I was faced with just overall making a decision, or not even making the decision because she was making it too, but of being the one to voice it, you know, because we were both just not saying anything, you know, it was just there, and, you know, we weren't really being definitive about, you know, what are we, you know, so when I was faced with having to voice it, you know, I thought, you know, I felt like I was going to, like, die or something if, you know, I actually said the words out loud, or if I actually admitted that the relationship, you know, had to stop, you know. And then I realized that, you know, and then she was going through a couple of things, you know, and I felt, you know, like I didn't want to bring this up amidst the other, you know, things that were going on in her life either. And I thought that it was me being weak if I just decided, you know what, no more. You know, and then I realized that I just had to be, you know, it had nothing to do with weakness. I had to be strong enough to let it go. And I had to be strong enough to say, hey, listen, this is not where either of us want to be. And, you know, it's better if we, and I suggested, you know, and she definitely agreed that we should just try to be friends, even though we said it was going to be difficult to be friends because we had been through a lot together. But we said that it was something that we both just really had to get used to and that we would both work on. And, you know, it took us a little bit of time to get things, you know, on the full friendship track. But, you know, we're closer, you know, than anything now. And, you know, I don't regret anything that happened in that relationship. You know, I think that both of us handled it. We both could have handled it better at times. But I think overall, when it came time to actually severing that portion of our relationship, we were both, you know, mature, and we were both adults about it. And, you know, we just let each other go because at the end of the day, we didn't not love each other. You know, we were not in love, but we didn't not love each other, and we loved each other at that point too much to allow each other to settle for something when both, when there was something better and more complete for both of us out there.
Okay, and the important thing that you said midstream was it wasn't really what you wanted. And if a relationship isn't serving two people's higher good, that's good enough reason to terminate it. And you saw that it wasn't helping your soul growth, it wasn't helping you evolve anymore. And if people would just get to that point where they realize that not all relationships are meant to last forever or last as romantic ones, sometimes it's even with friendships. You know, it's unusual if people have the same friends, group of friends their whole entire life. Namely, you will have groups of friends that sort of are there during a stage of your life, particularly when your children are young. Maybe there's some friends who have young children and they're your friends at that time, or, you know, you have a job and they're your friends at that particular time, and then you don't do that job anymore, and you might not have those friends anymore. It doesn't mean that those friends weren't important. It doesn't mean that they are any less important in your life because they are not there now. So it is letting go. And the kinds of clients that I have that are wondering why their life is so miserable and, you know, they're not getting along with any of their friends or anybody, and I'll realize that they've sort of been dragging along the same group of friends for the last 20 years, and everyone's changed so much that they're, whatever they had in common 20 years ago, they don't have in common now. And I keep saying you should seek some new friends as well, because friends can grow with us, and we do change, and sometimes we do need to pick some new friends in our lives. And that's important, that not all relationships are meant to last forever. And Kim, have you had that experience, friends that were close to you and they're not in your life now? Or
well, throughout my life, I mean, I've had many, you know, roads that I've traveled on in my lifetime, and I always say that those people were put in my life for a reason, and they'll always, you know, hold a space in my heart. I mean, some really tremendous stories that I won't get into, but I was always grateful for the people that were put in my life, whether it was, you know, a negative thing or a positive thing, because ultimately it all turned out to be okay. So at every moment in my journey in life, there has been a group of people there, and perhaps I've grown past them or they've grown past me, but in the end, I'm glad they were there.
Right, and if you try sometimes to hold on to these people beyond when they're meant to be in your life, it can contaminate the relationship to the extent that perhaps you're not similar anymore, and suddenly you're just not close, and you're forcing something that lasted for that particular moment in time, and now that moment has passed and it is time to let it go. And people who don't like change very much tend to hold on to the same friends even when they no longer are serving any purpose. And so we also need to understand that that doesn't make us bad people, and it doesn't make us, you know, less than grateful for those people that have been there when they have been there for us. So we're going to go over a little bit the eighth golden rule of love, and that's if two people meet and then separate, know there were powerful lessons to be learned in their communion and still more powerful ones to be learned in their separation. Now, that's an important concept, because if we are among the misfortunate who are in the midst of a soulmate relationship and for some reason that person leaves or they're not ready to commit or be in our life, that's a pretty devastating experience, and it's called a sacred betrayal, because we really expected this person to be in our lives, and you don't get over that very easily. And if you just become bitter and angry or you drink yourself to death over the situation, you're not going to learn the right lessons. So in the book, I do go over a lot of important things that we're meant to learn at the ending of a relationship, and we're going to go sort of over them point by point, and they start at page 531. And I know, Kim, when you had a soulmate relationship truncated sooner than you would have liked, after that you started this really deep soul-searching.
Yeah.
And could you tell us any lessons that you've learned? I'm sure I know you've learned a lot of them, but maybe one or two or three that come off the top of your head that you learned.
Well, I think most of all I've learned how to love unconditionally.
That's a big one.
Which is tremendous. I've learned how to be patient, or I'm trying to learn how to be patient.
That's
thank
a
you
lifetime
for,
journey.
Thank you so much for revising that, Kim, because otherwise you were getting thrown under the bus.
I know that. Every day I learn a little more patience, and I learn to laugh at myself. And believe me, I'm still learning every single day. It doesn't mean that person is any less to me than they ever were, but, you know, through the course of this, I just pretty much, I think the most important thing that I got out of the relationship was really learning about myself, making a commitment to myself to get to know myself again, because even in relationships, you get almost intertwined with somebody so much that you lose focus on yourself. And what your wants and what your desires are, you know, I mean, based on, you know, what the other person would like or, you know, their goals or desires or what have you. And being with my ex-husband, I was so focused on, you know, his aspects of life that I forgot about my own desires. And being with Joe, I think that the parting was pretty devastating to me, as you all know, and have been through me with that, and I appreciate all the shoulders I got to lean on and cry on. But at the same time, you know, I was never alone in my entire life from relationship one. So this was a tremendous thing for me.
Yeah, that's
you know,
big
to
one.
Be alone for, you know, and make a conscious choice to be alone when I didn't have to. I mean, I could have run out and, you know, it wasn't that easy anymore for me. Because I did have unconditional love for somebody, or, you know, I still do, but it just brought me closer to who I really am and who I want to be.
Okay, so if I were to go over what's number one listed in some things you might learn from the ending of relationships, this might fit you, Kim. It says, you might be asked to learn that love goes on even in the physical absence of that person. You know, he's not there. Your soulmate's not there. But is there some love going on still in your heart?
Every day.
Every day. So it didn't end just because the person's not there.
No, absolutely not. I mean, yesterday I did go through a little something where I had a former customer of mine that we were, you know, supposed friends. And yesterday I always pride myself in the fact that I don't get angry. But yesterday, for some reason, this particular client or customer, you know, I had to terminate the relationship because I felt truly uncomfortable with it. And all of a sudden, I just let out every piece of anger I had about every relationship with any man that I ever had from start to finish. And that was like the cherry on the cake. And I'm screaming, and I don't do this because, you know, I'm a pretty calm person. But it was the first time I really got angry. And I don't know if that's a good thing.
No, it's, first of all, that
or a
what happens
thing.
Is you're an old soul, and old souls have been many, many lifetimes. And old souls tend to not think that anger is a valid emotion because we've all had lifetimes and we all know people who the only emotion they're ever expressing is anger. They're always angry. They're always pissed off. There's always something wrong. And, you know, we're not just experiencing anger in life. Sometimes we're angry. We're mourning. We're lonely. We're hurting. We're filled with angst. We're longing. We're yearning. And so you're a person who's pretty much in touch with the other emotions that you experience. But the ending of a relationship that was untimely, that was unwanted, would bring up anger. Just as death, if you go through the stages of death, you know, people after they die, it's similar to the mourning stages of ending a relationship. You know, you first just sort of go into shock. Then there's a little bit of denial. Then there's the anger stage. You're kind of maybe in the anger stage at this point. And
well, I'm not angry today. Last night I was very angry.
And the anger came out. But the
no, last night you were pissed. It was beyond anger. You were pissed.
Okay, but the anger was probably been bottled up for a long time, you know, over the situation. So did you say what you mean what you say without being mean about it, or did you go down the route that most of us go when we're angry? We're really
actually, I told this gentleman that, you know, I think I needed to move forward from the relationship because I wasn't feeling comfortable with it. And he lashed out a little bit, and I said, well, I'm sorry you feel that way, but sometimes it is time to move forward. And, you know, I suggested him to use the law of attraction and like attracts like, and where he was coming from isn't what was comfortable for me in my life anymore. So he was very hurt and very disappointed and very upset, and then he lashed out at me, and I was like, please don't contact me anymore. And I did it lovingly, I believe.
No, you were more constructive than I would have been.
Yeah.
Okay,
but,
well, that's good, because then you learned how to constructively express your anger. And that might be a lesson in the ending of relationships. We're going to be angry, particularly if we didn't want the ending. And there's a lot of my clients that come in, their husbands or their wives want a divorce, and they don't want it. And they're filled with this rage and this anger, and they just want to get even and be vengeful, and they just want to be hateful, and they just can't lash out enough. I have to get them to understand that anger is a valid emotion at that point, but they have to express it in a different way, and they have to finally get it out and let it go. They can't stay in that anger stage forever because it's not healthy. So, you know, anger is definitely a feeling that we're going to feel at the end of a relationship. Maybe not the first moment. It depends on the kind of person you are. But I think you're such a kind person, Kim, that the anger might be coming later on inside of you. Because
it was funny. It wasn't necessarily this gentleman that made me angry. It was just the last straw almost, you know, before.
Yeah, that happened.
And I am a person that knows every feeling when I'm having it. I'm very aware of what I'm feeling at every moment of the day, which isn't always a good thing. And I can't anesthetize it with any drugs or alcohol or, you know, any other addictions for that matter. So I have to go through it, and I laugh, and people say, oh, why don't you have a drink? Why don't you have a pill? Why don't you smoke a joint? I said, because I got to feel what I'm going through.
And
because if I don't,
exactly
I'm not
right.
going to resolve these issues.
And that's exactly right. And I have to give you a lot of courage for that, because it was channeled to me when I had to face some very, very hard childhood memories that I was not to seek, you know, taking tranquilizers or antidepressants or any kind of alcohol or drugs or anything to get through this, because I needed to feel it and I needed to get it out. It's a lot harder to do that unassisted, to feel really pain unassisted. It really is. But
well, Cindy, I'm not going to say, I mean, in the beginning of the porting of last year, I had to take a little antidepressants. I'm not ashamed to say that.
But you did, but you're not. But you
and I did for 4 months, and I do. You know, if you're really down and out at that point, I think you need to take them. And I, you know, that's what modern medicine is about. And when I came to the point where I was like, all right, I'm past this, and now I can feel the emotions without really, you know, getting too low, is when I decided that, you know. But that's there for a reason too.
And then
you know?
That's right. But it's I like your. What you said, it's you were on it for the time you needed, and you got off. For some reason, psychiatrists seem to think people need to stay on antidepressants forever, which I don't know where that ever came through. And, you know, they're there for the crises, and during that moment we need them. But people don't necessarily need to stay on them forever.
Right.
And that's an important concept to understand. So when you went off of them, you started to, you know, face what you needed to face. I mean, you were facing it anyway. I never saw you not facing it. But now perhaps some of the anger that you might have felt in the beginning when the relationship was over, had you not been on these antidepressants, might be coming out now. Because depression is anger turned inward.
Right.
So you're an old soul. You turn the anger inward rather than vent it outward. But there is a time when you need to kind of vent it. And
I vented it.
That's good. That's good.
She did.
Now, The number two was perhaps God is asking you to learn how to love unconditionally. And, of course, you said that. You learned to love unconditionally. You know, at the ending of the relationship, you went on loving this person even though he wasn't in your life. And that's not always easy, but you did that. The third thing is you might need to learn that only love matters, that two of you might have let every obstacle, both real and imaginary, separate you. If this were the case, then as time goes by, you'll come to learn that only love was important, that everything else should have fallen by the wayside, but the love was meant to last. This lesson is a very hard one to bear at first, for it can fill you with deep feelings of remorse and regret. But if you truly absorb this sorrowful lesson into every fiber of your being, you can take comfort in knowing you'll never let love slip away again. Kim, do you think that's something that you're going to strive to make sure you pray not only for a soulmate, but one who's ready and willing to able to love and commit to you?
Every day.
Right, because, and this time, I don't think you'd let it get away.
No. I was trying not to let the other one get away either, but we weren't on the same page anymore, so, but I have a sense of humor about it now. So.
Well, you see, that's the whole point. If we learn to sort of laugh and learn from it, and we can only laugh after we've really learned the right lessons, because otherwise we're going to stay stuck angry or in depression and, you know, great mourning and loss. You might need to learn how to listen to your heart, not to other people. Now, this is an important one. If you ended a relationship because of the way your friends or family felt about a person or because you feared their reaction, the heart-wrenching suffering you'll be forced to endure will make you realize that what others say or think is not as important as what your heart tells you. Now, sometimes, you know, if someone's worried because they're married and they fall in love with someone else and they're really afraid of what their family will say and their friends, they might walk away from even a great love. And that's what happened to Kim. I think that's a very hard parting, and that's a very hard lesson to learn. You know, if you've been listening to everyone else instead of your own heart. And, you know, Kim was put in a similar position that I once was. I had no choice. You really had no choice.
No.
But to accept what was coming your way.
Yes.
And I think another thing we can throw in here is if we're getting involved with a married person, we have to acknowledge...
Which I do not recommend.
Yes. And I don't either. And that's what I'm getting at, because sometimes they're committed commitment phobics. They're in marriages they're not really committed to heart, soul, mind, and body. So that means they're a commitment phobic. So you get involved with them, and they're not necessarily going to be able to commit to you either. They might be just one foot with you and one foot with the other person for a very long time. And even after, and I've seen some horrible, you know, things happen where a woman's been waiting for 10 years for this married man. She started maybe when she was 35, okay? She's been with him, sort of having this affair with a married man for 10 years, and she's 45 now. She hasn't any children or anything. She really wants them. And this actually happened. And the man she was having an affair with for a decade, his wife died. So she was so excited, thinking, you know, now he's going to come my way. Do you know he didn't commit to her? He said, well, no. You know, I was married a long time. Now I want to be free. So here she spent 10 years thinking that, you know, believing all the excuses. He said, well, I can't leave his wife for this reason, that other reason. He's a commitment phobic. He's not going to commit to her even now. And she wasted like 10 years of her life with this man. And it's not wasted because she learned things, but now she's 45 years old and she wants to have kids. It's not that easy to find someone at 45 and, you know, as your biological clock's ticking. So if you're involved with someone who's married, you have to examine whether that person is really truly a person who's ever going to leave, you know, their husband or wife, or they're a person who's a committed commitment phobic and may never come your way. And that's a sad case. Now we have number 5. You might need to learn how and when to speak your mind and assert yourself. Perhaps you let too much slide or nagged about all the wrong things and never really spoke up about the real issues. Perhaps you wanted peace at any price and allowed your mate to get away with violating your basic human rights until the relationship got so far off course there was no turning back. Now, that's one thing. If people out there in the listening audience think it's okay, you know, I'm making peace at any price, I don't want to fight in front of my kids, I bite my tongue, I don't say things. In the long run, that's not really healthy. And I don't know if either Kim or Nicole have been in the kind of relationship where they couldn't express themselves.
Well, I was married to somebody like that for a long time, and again, my mind took over, and I said, just suck it up, and you know, do what you got to do, and inside, I was just so very lonely, and I always tell people, I think it's worse to be in a relationship and be lonely than being alone.
Yeah, and I think it's really true. There's no worse place to be than in a marriage you don't want to be in.
That and it wasn't that I didn't care about him and I didn't, you know, I loved him, you know, and maybe I tried to rekindle the relationship. I'm laughing at that word now because I don't even know what that means anymore. But when my heart was just dying, just saying, you know, I just want a better love. I just want something more. There's something better out there.
And that's the whole concept of the higher love. Without ever having heard of the book Grant Me a Higher Love, because I hadn't met you at the time, you were yearning for something better, something higher, something more. So it is in all of us, deeply ingrained in us, that feeling that there is a better kind of love. And if you...
And I, personally, I really didn't want to settle for this anymore. It was just taking the steps that I needed to take and, you know, discussing it. And we had discussed divorce probably 3 years prior to actually doing it. So it wasn't like a shocking thing. But I think the ego, most of all, just gets so affected, you know, about a type of rejection. But it's really not a rejection. It's having him have something more and having me have something more. I think that's love in itself.
Right. And, you know, number six is perhaps you need to learn not to push people too far. If you were the one who took advantage of your mate's kindness, unselfishness, or innate goodness, then by honestly examining your heart, you'll be able to fully comprehend why your mate finally got fed up and left. Now, sometimes, you know, I know I told my husband for a long time that his behaviors were unacceptable and that I wanted to leave him. I don't think he ever believed it, but he was pushing too far and too hard, and there was a point in which I couldn't tolerate his behavior anymore. And all of us have to examine our behavior. Do we do things that drive people crazy? And you know, I think my grandmother used to have an expression. It was like, well, I could take her in small doses. Now, do we want to be the kind of person that people say, well, I could take her in a small dose? I mean, that's
so funny that you said that, Cindy.
Because you've heard that, or you know people you can only take for 5 minutes and you have to run in the middle.
No, that's not what I'm saying. Earlier today, Kim and I were talking to a friend of ours, and, you know, we were like, oh, you know, well, we always know when you're happy. When you get a girlfriend, you seem to disappear. And he turns around and he's like, well, you know, I've been working a lot and this and that. And he turns around about his girlfriend, and he says, well, what did he say, Kim? Oh, girlfriends take up a lot of your time. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, they take up so much of your time. They always want to be with you. And I'm like, well, don't you want to be with her, too? He's like, no, not really.
Wow.
And this is a very new relationship. And then
yeah,
I,
well, that's not
well,
new.
Yeah, like when it's new, if you're feeling that, then this is an issue.
Like, is this true love? And he said,
well,
there's
what
no such
love?
Thing. What's true love? I'm like, you just answered.
Certainly not that.
And he left in a huff. He was very mad at me.
Yeah.
And again, if you think about that, it's, you know, if you can't, you don't want to be with a person and you've only just met them. That's not a good sign. And, you know, I always tell my clients, if you're the kind of person that people can't stand to be near for more than 5 or 10 minutes, you got to work on your personality a little bit. You know, and I have a wonderful client. I love her, and she really is a wonderful client. But she tends to drive people crazy, and she drives me crazy. And I'm her tarot card reader. You know what I mean? It's like, and I'm getting paid to listen, and she's driving me crazy. So, you know,
I know the feeling.
So, you know, you know, if even the people you're paying to listen to you don't want to listen to you, you've got a personality disorder. Perhaps, you know, you're just too high strung, you're too nervous, everything's a catastrophe. You know, the kind of people you don't want to be near because, you know, everything.
It doesn't feel good to be with them.
No, and if anything goes wrong, it's a big deal, it's a disaster. You know, to try to cultivate being a little easygoing is a trait that might help your relationships last longer in general because you're a person that people genuinely want to be near and be around. So, you know, if your relationships keep ending because people say, I can't take you, you're too needy, you're too dependent, you talk so nasty all the time or you hammer at me and I can't even get a word in edgewise because you're always talking, I mean, when people say these things, you know, if you've heard it like 800 times from 800 different people, there might be some truth to that. So it's, again, examining, am I doing something that's driving people crazy? And do I need to work on my own issues of neediness or, you know, my own, you know, as soon as we displace our anger on other people, we're really angry at our boss and we come home, we yell at our husband or our wife. We need to deal with our anger issues and not place them on the people we love the most, because after a while, that person doesn't want to be your whooping board. They don't want to be hit. They don't want to be yelled at. They don't want to be screamed at. So that's a very simple lesson. And if, you know, if the person that's broken up with you has some valid things to say and you've heard them before, it might be a good time to work on some of those issues. Perhaps you need to learn how to deal with your dependency issues. You know, some people are just so needy. You know, have you ever been with a really needy, needy person? It's not easy. You know, I don't want to be a mommy. You know, I've been a mommy. And, you know, if I have to be somebody's mommy, I'm going to run for the hills. So, you know, especially once you've raised children or you're raising children, you know, you've done that. You've been there. So working on dependency issues is an important thing. I know Kim and Nicole are pretty independent people. I don't think they have such dependency needs at all, but there are people out there that are really needy.
Yep. You know, I'm just thinking about a lot of people that I've met across
the way. There is no elaboration on that. It's just the
Yeah, it's just...
That's pretty self-explanatory.
And I always say, well, if there's... You can't change something if you don't believe there's something that needs to change. If you're too busy focusing on the other person and blaming the other person, maybe you need to change yourself.
And that's right.
In order, you know, don't change for the other person. Change for yourself. The woman I told you about a couple weeks ago with the Viagra on the dresser,
yes.
She ultimately wound up trying to kill herself last week.
Oh,
and
Was that an act of anger? Was it an act of...
Well, she just thought her life was over and there's nothing left to her life. Why? Because your husband's out with another woman? Go live life. You're a young woman. And I knew that was going to happen because she was acting way too cool about it. And ultimately, you know, she's getting the help that she needs. And her husband, which is, you know, somebody I know as well, said, well, I guess I'll go into the counseling, whatever it takes to make you better. And I kind of just laughed at that, and I said, well, perhaps you need to focus on what's going to make you better as well.
Well, what I find is people practice a lot of denial at the end of their relationships, which is not good. You know, I have clients who, you know, they want counseling from me, and I cannot counsel anybody in a relationship if they're both not committed to the relationship working. And, you know, I have a woman... She wants to commit to working on the marriage, and it's a long-term marriage, like 20-something years, and he's not sure. And I'll say, I can't help you if you're not both wanting to commit to this marriage. You know, he doesn't want to commit, and she keeps practicing this deep denial, thinking, well, why can't this relationship be fixed? Why can't it work? And she's in total denial of a lot of the things her husband's doing because she just doesn't want to face reality. So sometimes when a relationship's coming to an end, we've got to start facing reality. We've got to start facing that the marriage or the relationship wasn't good, that perhaps neither people were ever committed. So many of my clients, they've been involved in, you know, they've had affair after affair while they're married, or they've been swinging as a couple, or someone's been a gambler or a drug addict. I mean, there's been these big issues in the relationship all along. And there is a time when perhaps these are deal breakers and the relationship can't be fixed. And
rekindled.
And it can't be rekindled. And there's a point where a lot of times people really, really are staying way too long in relationships that
I spoke with a woman yesterday and she said, I really would like to get a divorce. My husband's a pathological liar. He's doing his own thing anyway. I just really don't know how to begin the process. But I don't love them, and there's nothing there.
And
but
do they
together,
have children?
I'm sorry?
Does she have children?
She does.
Okay. Again, part of the, you know, the battle is taking that step forward. There's a million books on divorce. And a good place to start for people who are not sure is to go to the library or go to the bookstore and read about divorce in New York State, what you need to do, what you need to know. I think if you're armed with a little bit of knowledge of what the real laws are, because a lot of times women think even now that they're divorced, they're going to land in poverty because they don't work. And I'll say, well, your husband has a business. You've been married to him for, 10 years. You're entitled to half his business. And they look at me like, what? you're entitled to half the house. Well, I didn't pay for it, I said, it doesn't matter. So I think if people are thinking about divorce, if you go and educate yourself about it, read about it, before you even go to a lawyer, it'll start to seem less scary than if you really don't know anything about it. So again, once we make up our mind to do something, the doors start to open and we start to learn what we need to learn. I think it's when we're not sure if we're going to get divorced or stay married and we go back and forth, those are the hardest moments. Once we finally make the move and the decision to go forward, it's really quite easy. Your mind has been made up.
I agree.
I think she's just not sure,
Well, I offered to tell her to, try to rekindle the relationship. She laughed at me, and I kind of laughed at myself because I think I'm done saying that. But, I always have hope for everybody's relationship, and she's a very young woman, under 40, and she really doesn't know how to do it, and I'm a little confused, but I think this is more common than not, and I'm not going to sit there and, offer her information on that. I just said, if you can work it out, work it out. If you can't, you deserve as much love as the next person,
and
pay for the kids because they know he's a pathological liar too, even if it's not said. So,
well, even educating yourself about divorce might make you have the confidence to either fix your marriage or give it, because you know that you can get out of it. Sometimes you're just feeling so hopeless. So if you've got a little bit of knowledge behind your belt and say, well, I'm going to try to fix this before I get out of it, but I do now know how to get out of it if I need it. Sometimes it's that you're doing nothing. You get that negative karma. I'm just not going to do anything because I don't know how to fix this marriage. I don't know how to get out of it. I don't know how to do anything. So sometimes having that information that you could get out of this gives you that sort of, well, let me go back in here and see if I can get him to understand that I'm serious, that this is I'm serious about a divorce. I have the knowledge about my rights and what can be done, but I'm putting my two feet here trying to heal it and see if it can do that. So knowledge can be empowering one way or the other. And, you could also maybe need to learn that love is not about control. Some people are control freaks, and they try to control everything, and they're busy bossing people around forever. And finally, that whole master-slave archetype runs old as people get older. And, people have to stop being so controlling of other people. They need to give them a little space to breathe in a relationship, and particularly in a marriage, some room for growth. And that's an important one, because so many women that I speak to are with very controlling men, and after a while, they don't know who they are. They don't know what they want. They don't know what to think, and because they've been controlled so long. So, again, if you're a control freak, I would say it's time to learn to, live and let live a little bit.
Mm.
Sometimes
I think a lot of people are afraid of individuality in a relationship.
Yes,
they think that if they don't hold tight enough and if they don't start to conform and almost melt into the same person, that they're going to lose the relationship. It's a sense of insecurity for them.
Right, it is insecurity. There's a lot of insecurity in that. So, again,
I think it's a lot of weakness and a lot of lack of courage and a lot of lack of identity. I'm not saying that in a negative way, but I see people, in marriages for 20 and 30 years that have been having just ridiculous amount of affairs and, as long as she doesn't know or as long as he doesn't know, we're okay, but you're lying.
And
the relationship is a lie.
And not only that, I can't stress enough that to be doing that, it affects us biologically. We might think it's okay, but our body knows better. It knows that this is unethical and this is not moral behavior. So people who continually engage in long-term affairs end up with high blood pressure or diabetes or MS or some disease, because after a while the body starts saying, you know, this is not right, and it attacks itself. By nature, human beings are people that know right from wrong and know morality. So, you know, that whole idea, what someone doesn't know won't hurt them, is kind of ridiculous thinking. And, you know, normally people are being deluded, too, because 99% of the time people do know when their mate's having an affair.
Yes.
They just don't, as long as it's not shoved in their face, they might not choose to acknowledge it. But
it's
the
overall concept of what they don't know doesn't hurt them, but you still know.
Right, exactly.
You know, it's not like you're going to have an affair and then immediately, oops, you know, it's stricken from your memory. You still know. You know, and I mean, people just need to realize that I mean, in all different, you know, ways, that sometimes it's better to sacrifice security, you know, and the security of either being with someone so that you're not alone, security of sharing, you know, a household and financial responsibilities with someone. Sometimes you need to sacrifice security for serenity. And it has to become about your state of mind, and it has to become about you gaining yourself back. It's not about the house. It's not about the money.
And ultimately, I say, if you don't do that, you're just perpetuating a cycle for your children.
Exactly. And that's the bottom line that we keep talking about. Somebody's got to end the dysfunction. Somebody's got to end. And children usually know when their parents are having an affair.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
You know, I've had clients in which the kids knew. Kids heard their father talking on the cell phone or saw text messages the father wrote. And the kids are the ones sort of not knowing whether they should tell their mother or not. So, you know, if you think you're fluent...
And it's not a stress for a child to have to bear.
No. No. And sometimes children see the parent or they've experienced it. I know that happened in my household growing up. My father was having a long-term affair that we all knew about the kids, and we all felt terrible, you know, not saying anything to our mother about it. And I later realized, and Tabitha only realized, she knew. And it was this really awkward, horrible thing to be 10 years old and know this, because, you know, children are too young to figure out maybe there's a reason somebody's having an affair. We don't have that kind of knowledge. So I always tell people, don't think you're fooling anybody. Because the kids usually know, and that puts them in a really uncomfortable position. So, again, you know, think seriously if you're going to have a long-term affair. Is it something that's uncovered by your children? Is that what you want your children to know? Because kids don't seem to get over that. You know, they grow up to be very mistrustful human beings oftentimes. They're always thinking their mate's going to cheat on them.
You know, it's funny. I know a gentleman, he's into his 40s, and he said when he was about 22 years old, he found out his father was cheating on his mother. And, you know, the whole town knew. And he's like, even at 22, I just have no respect for this man to this day.
But you
I never looked at him the same, and I don't respect him. And he's getting, now in his 80-plus years, he's getting everything he deserves, ironically enough. But he's a very lonely man now.
And
his son still goes there, and he said, I just don't have that kind of love and respect for him. You know, I'm bad, but I just look at him, and I can't stand the guy.
And the problem with these affairs is a lot of times they're happening in the neighborhood. So they're happening with their friends, you know, the children's friend's mother or father. It's happening down the block. It's happening, you know, the Little League team, you know, that you're meeting that person at the Little League team. And the kids know what's going on because it's just not, you know, they're perceptive. They sense it. So, again, if you're having a long-term affair, if you're having an affair, think if it's something that you want your children to uncover or discover. I mean, kids don't really have the knowledge that we might possess when we're older. If we found out, and people get shocked now. I mean, there are people that told me they found out when their mother died that she had a long-term affair because the guy showed up. And, you know, she's like 80 now, and you know, and they, when she died, and they're shocked. So, I mean, I don't know what level children don't get shocked, but it is something to seriously think about if you're having an affair. How is it going to affect the children?
Well, Cindy, people don't necessarily go into meeting someone with having an affair either. It's not. It's definitely subconscious, but it's definitely,
oh, yeah.
You know, most of the time not conscious. you're desiring something that's missing in your relationship, obviously, and it's not like, yeah, I want to go out and hurt everybody in my life, because of course I really would like to believe that no one person is that evil, but sometimes, you know, it does happen, and I do believe that some people can get over it. Myself, I probably wouldn't be able to, and make the relationship better. I'm questioning it because I haven't, in my mind, met anybody who has done that, but
I find that
I think you have to have a level of spirituality that really surpasses, and a level of unconditional love that surpasses anything, you know. Never to think about it or bring it up again.
Right, and that's what it's very hard to do. And so there's many, many lessons in the ending of relationships. Some of them are harder lessons to learn than others. This one, perhaps you need to learn who you really are. We were talking about that before. You know, if you didn't know who you were, and you don't know who you are, you know, at the end of a relationship, you have to say, was I happy with the person I was in that relationship? Was I doing the things that I wanted to do? Was I compromising on my core values? Those are important questions. And or maybe you needed to learn that everything you need to survive is within yourself, and you don't need a knight in shining armor or a fairy princess to rescue you. I mean, even your friend who tried to kill herself, now he's got to play the role of the rescuer.
Well, I was like, well, and you know, I had said to her daughter, I said, well, now he's going to stay another couple years, even if he doesn't want to, because she's afraid she's going to do something. Is that why you want somebody to stay?
Right, because now, and don't think that in the bottom of back of her mind that wasn't an act of manipulation at some level.
Oh, absolutely.
It was a cry for help.
Right, and perhaps you need to learn that love isn't about money or possessions. We talked about that. You know, when a relationship ends, maybe you didn't go with the love of your life because you were afraid you couldn't afford to do it, or you were, you know, in a position that being with this person, can I really afford this relationship, or you're in a marriage that you can't get out of, you think. Again, love has to really, a higher love has to really go above all of those things, and that's a hard lesson. Maybe you needed to learn that some relationships were only meant to last for a while. And I think, you know, Kim, with your soulmate, he could have been the man you could have spent your life with if it had turned out differently. He might still be that, who knows. But it doesn't make it not a good soulmate, or you learn so many wonderful lessons that he is a major league soulmate in your life, no matter how long he lasted or didn't last. He really got you to make some major changes in your life, whether you know it or not. I believe even your career change is an indirect response to that.
I would have to agree.
So, again, it's not, we're not going to measure a soulmate, a major league one, by how long he's in our life, or her, she's in our life. It's the impact they have upon our soul growth. And no one is ever going to negate that he had a great impact upon your soul growth. And that's very important. And God might be asking you to come to terms with the concept of revenge at the end of a relationship. So many people still want revenge when a relationship ends. They slash tires. They put nasty stuff on the web about a person. They go through horrible, you know, divorces with all this drama. If we could just learn that people have a right to leave us if that's what they need to do, even if you're married. You never own any person. They always have the right to walk away. Whether you like it or not, people always have the right to do that. We might say it's not right. He walked out of our lives, whatever. You can't stop someone who wants to leave. And in trying to do that, you're only pretending something. You're only forcing somebody to do something that they don't want.
Well, it's an illusion.
It's an illusion. And, you know,
I lived the illusion for a while, so I'm not saying
we all have. Everybody has. Every single thing I teach in my book, I've done, we've all done. Nobody's, you know, better or worse about this. But the point is that some of these lessons are harder to learn than others, but that need for revenge is still pretty strong in people. You know, that's why, you know, that you see these men all the time coming after women and killing them because they wanted to leave. That might be an extreme pathological case, but people are still doing very vengeful things you know, even on a lesser note, even if it's just, you know, bad-mouthing them on the internet or something. Now, there's a lot of lessons that are sometimes not going to be learned in a minute. You know, it takes time for all these lessons to emerge, so don't think you're going to learn them the first second you break up with someone. And, you know, perhaps you need to learn how to bury the relationship, mourn for it, and let it go. We do have to feel the experience as if someone died. We do have to go through that whole process. So some people just want to bypass that. They break up with somebody, the next second they're on the internet shopping for another mate, or mm-hmm. they're out going to bar. They don't want to do the necessary mourning. And the worst marriages are usually when someone loves their husband or wife and that person died, and they marry somebody in the next 6 months. Mm. They just didn't want to mourn. They didn't want to do the mourning.
I'm not going to say that I didn't try to go out and meet somebody the first probably 3 months because I just couldn't handle the, you know, the pain of it all. But I didn't. You know, I just didn't. And, you know, because I'm with somebody and I'm thinking about somebody else, how fair is that to that person, you know? And it wasn't a vengeful thing. I never would do anything, you know, in revenge to somebody. Hope nobody would do that to me, but
yeah,
it's been done to me before, but, you know, it's best, I think, in my opinion, to just, you know, definitely mourn the relationship and get to know yourself. Don't jump into another relationship because it's not fair to another person or a human being to have a broken person or a broken-hearted person to deal with.
Right, and perhaps a very powerful lesson is maybe you need to learn that relationships don't end the moment the actual physical connection stops. Long after two people have parted ways, their souls may go on communing with each other in an effort to take care of some unfinished business. Now, this is why even after you're divorced a while, you might be dreaming about your mate, or you might find yourself thinking about them. You know, all relationships are eternal at some level. They're never going to not be a part of our fiber, and maybe we never fully leave anyone. Maybe they're always going to be in us, and so thinking that you're going to totally make up a severance from someone and never look back and never think about them is probably not very realistic.
I would say definitely not.
and I think some people really think they're going to do that. They're just going to
good luck to them.
Well, we're going to do our little shout-outs. I have one. I sent out the newsletter today, of course, talking about the book, and if you got it today, any of you listeners, you'll see that I had been nominated by a couple of people for the best of the best psychics on Long Island in Long Island Press. And what I need from you out there is, and I did put it in the newsletter, a link that if you would nominate me again, because it seems to be sort of a popularity contest at some level. You know, how many nominations you get depends whether you will actually be then in for the voting for the best of the best. So if any of you have a moment, you can read the newsletter. There's a link that you just click. It will take you to the Long Island Press homepage, or you can just go to the Long Island Press homepage and go to the link that says Best of Long Island. It will take you to the page, and then you just put my name in it and vote. So I appreciate all those that have already done it. People keep telling me they've done it. And
you're welcome.
You did it too?
Yes.
I did, you know, someone, I didn't even know about this. Two of my clients said, you know, we nominated you, and I said, where, how, when? And then they sent me the link, so they said it would help to get more people to nominate, so that's important. So I'm glad I said that. Kim, do you have a shout-out today?
Yes, actually I do. I have a shout-out to Connor and Ryan. I hope you had a very lovely day with your daddy, and I hope you enjoyed your rice soup. And Daddy would be number 15. Thank you for accepting my friendship and expecting nothing else in return. I really do think that our friendship will be a long time. And thank you to Taff to give me some money for groceries this week. That really that really was a gift from God, because I don't like the freezer empty. So I do thank you, and I love you all.
And Kim, don't forget to call me for your reading.
Yes.
And Cindy, I just got somebody in the chat room. They wanted to know what town do they put in to nominate you?
Okay.
Their town.
Their town.
I wasn't sure if you put,
It's their town, yes.
Are you supposed to be putting your own town in there and your own
yes.
stuff?
Yeah.
I didn't even know that. I couldn't
yeah.
figure out what that was, you know? And then under the category of psychic, because that's an important thing. You know, usually John Edward gets in there and Jeffrey Wands because they have these huge mailing lists of email lists, and it's kind of a silly thing because it looks to me more like it's, a popularity contest, but I figure let's give it a try.
And also, I am reading The Secret once again this year. I need to go back to basics, and The Secret is the book of the week. And do not read Cosmopolitan, anybody. Go on.
And we've got 3 seconds.
Okay, Nicole.
Well, no, we're not streaming anymore, but for those who are listening in the podcast, I have no shout-outs. Thank you for listening, everybody.
Okay, and Kim, please call me.
Yes.
So we can set up, okay, because this way I look at my schedule for you.
Okay. I love you all.
Bye.
Goodbye.